You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters Live.
Welcome to the Table Talk podcast. I'm Stephen Gates. In a previous episode, we spoke with Tim Spector about his work on the gut microbiome. And today, I'm joined by Megan Rossi, a leading researcher in gastrointestinal health. We're going to be talking about the extraordinary link between gut health and mental health. Megan, welcome to Table Talk.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to get to delve right deep into this, you know, fascinating new area.
Well, first of all, if you can just start off by giving us the absolute basics, what is the gut-brain axis?
Well, essentially, it's this ongoing communication that occurs between our gut and our brain. And I think, you know, forever we've known there is some link there. If you think about going for an exam or an interview, you kind of get those butterflies in your stomach. And that there is a perfect example of this gut-brain axis. But it's only been, I guess, in the last, you know, 10 or so years that we've understood a new element to this gut-brain communication. And that's the fact that we have these trillions of microbes living in our gut. And collectively, we call this our gut microbiota. So I'm not sure how much listeners are aware of this, but it's not only bacteria living in our gut, but we also have things like fungi and viruses, which actually synergistically work to look after us. And one of the things we've found out is that these microbes actually can communicate with our brain, which is just so fascinating. In fact, if we kind of break it down to the mechanisms, and I think it's also always helpful when people are talking about this gut-brain axis, is to understand a little bit more about how our gut, which is, you know, in a very different part to our body, to our brain, actually can communicate. And there's thought to be three different pathways. So the first one is our nervous system, which is kind of like a mobile phone, I like to think it. So if something's going on, our microbes can send up this electric signal via their mobile phone up to our brain and let it know, you know, something's
this is
happening.
Magic.
I know, no, it's really fascinating. And the second pathway is via our blood system. Hmm. And that can be likened to something like, you know, the mail or the post service, where our microbes can produce certain types of chemicals. They package them up and send them up through our blood system into our brain, and is another form of, you know, communication, saying certain things about whether we need to relax or get more stressed, whether we're hungry, what our blood sugars are doing, and things like that. And then there's a third pathway, which is known as our immune system. And I like to liken that similar to an alarm system, where if our microbes sense something's going on that's quite dangerous, it will trigger our immune system to produce certain types of inflammatory markers, which then communicate to our brain to take action. So our gut microbes and our immune system are very much interlinked. In fact, our gut microbes are constantly teaching our immune system, and are thought to be key to, you know, things like lower sick days and ensuring we don't get food allergies and things like that.
Mm. This is absolutely extraordinary stuff, isn't it? Is it true that there are more microbes in our gut than we have human cells in the body?
Yeah, yeah. It can freak a lot of people out when you start to think about what
we're actually aliens.
Kind of like, yeah, we are aliens in disguise, and a little bit humbling to the human ego who likes to be very human centric.
Yeah,
we need
control.
To start thinking, yeah, yeah. More
okay,
about our microbes.
So the gut-brain axis exists. What are the messages that the gut is sending the brain? What's it telling us?
So many different factors. In fact, we think they communicate every couple of seconds, but our brain can also talk to our gut microbes. Yeah. So it's thought to be a two-way communication. And it can be things we think like our appetite level, so our blood sugar regulation. So are we hungry? Are we full? Is there something going on in our gut? Like, are we producing too much gas? Is there a lot of pressure in there that can also communicate off? And then messages going down can be things like, it seems to be a lot of emotions. So, you know, if we're really stressed or we're upset, often we do get that feeling in our gut. And we do we've started to see that people who have mental health conditions, for example, depression, they seem to have slightly different gut microbes than people without depression. So there's growing evidence for more of, I guess, therapeutic target for mental health conditions via our gut.
How can the gut affect our mental health? What are the parameters of that?
Yeah, so it certainly is only early days to our understanding, but the research really started to take off back in 2013, where this incredible study took place. It was really quite a landmark study, which highlighted that our gut microbes essentially could communicate with our brain. And what they did, not to get too sciencey, but I think sometimes hearing about the studies can be really insightful. They randomized people to either getting a probiotic, so a live bacteria in a yogurt, or getting a yogurt without any bacteria in it. And what they did at the start of the study, so before at baseline, before they started taking any intervention, they actually got them in this MRI machine. Have you ever had one of them before?
I have, a couple, MRI.
Yeah. So it kind of like scans, it's quite loud. And what they did is they scanned people's brains as they showed them different types of negative images. And what they looked at is what parts of the brain got activated. So they did that to everyone at baseline, and then they randomized them, as I said, to the different interventions, whether it was the active, like the live bacteria yogurt, or just no bacteria, just standard yogurt. And they got them to come back after taking that intervention every day for 4 weeks. And they did the same thing. And what they found was just so striking, and that those who had the live yogurt, so with the bacteria in it, actually had a reduction in the part of their brain that is associated with negative emotions when they got shown those images under that MRI machine, suggesting that the microbes actually could have increased those people's resilience to negative stimuli that you might be exposed to. For example, if you receive a bad email, or, you know, someone cuts you off in traffic and things like that. So that's kind of, you know, when I think researchers started to think, wow, this is actually, you know, this is actually a thing. And since then, there's been a wealth of research exploding.
Before we go on, what in evolutionary terms, what benefit would it have for us to feel the need to go to the toilet when you're stressed? why would that be important to us or useful?
Yeah, so it's not always that way, actually. Some people who are stressed actually shut up shop.
Yeah.
So I don't know if there's any benefit to that. In fact, you'd think it would, you know, slow you down if the the tigers were chasing you.
Is the gut a second brain, or is that a very misleading concept?
Yeah, so the gut being a second brain actually came, you know, quite a while ago. And that's when we understood that our gut is actually controlled by this other type of neural pathway called our enteric nervous system. So we have our central nervous system, which is like our brain system. And then we have this other nervous system, which is the enteric nervous system. And the really interesting thing about this enteric nervous system is that it contains, you know, millions of neurons similar to our brain. And it actually doesn't need our brain to function, which is why we've considered it the second brain. So our digestion, our gut movement can actually occur without the brain telling it to do
so. It's autonomous from the brain. That is extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah. So that's where the concept of the second brain came from. Had nothing to do with the bacteria.
Yeah.
But now, where we've started to understand more about the microbes, we've then thought of another reason why it's similar to the, you know, being a second brain, is because our microbes actually have a lot of control potentially over our emotions, our appetite, and things like that.
So the big question really is, what can we do with that knowledge? Can we eat ourselves happy or sad?
Well, my new book is actually called Eat Yourself Healthy. There was an amazing study which came out just recently, actually, which really did highlight that we essentially can, to some degree, eat ourselves happy. And this study was undertaken by the Food and Mood Centre in Australia. And what they did is they took a group of people with moderate to severe depression, and they randomised them either to get a Mediterranean diet. Now, the Mediterranean diet is very, very high in fibre. So it actually contains 50 grams of fibre per day.
Yeah.
In the UK, we're having less than 20 grams of fibre, and the government regulations say 30 grams of fibre. So this is really, really high in fibre. And the important thing about fibre, and, you know, not everyone's aware of this, but fibre is essentially food for our gut microbes. Humans can't digest fibre. So when humans eat fibre, so fibre comes from all our different plant-based foods, so whole grains, nuts, seeds, legumes, fruit, veggies. When we eat these foods, the fiber essentially gets malabsorbed. So we can't actually, human cells can't digest fiber. So it makes its way into the lower part of that 9-meter long intestine, which is where the trillions of microbes live. And that's where the microbes ferment the fiber and do all these amazing things with it. So when we talk about why fiber is so beneficial, it's not because it feeds human cells. It's essentially because it feeds our gut microbes.
Mm-hmm.
So any diet that's really high in fiber is, you know, essentially a gut loving or a gut boosting sort of diet. So this Mediterranean diet has, you know, is loaded with fiber as well as many other beneficial nutrients which feed our gut. Things like polyphenols, which are high in red wine, dark chocolate, etc. Our gut microbes actually love to eat them. So the participants were randomized to either getting that really gut boosting diet or getting the placebo group, which is a counseling type of intervention. So the participants saw the researchers 7 times over 12 weeks, whether they got the diet or got the counseling. And it was really, really important that they had that counseling placebo group to make sure that the benefit they observed wasn't just because they're seeing a researcher, but actually because of the diet.
Mm.
And after the 12 weeks, what they found is that 32% of people in the diet group actually had a significant reduction in their depression levels, which would have classified them as no longer clinically depressed.
Wow, that's
in the placebo group,
really
only 8%.
Yeah.
And, you know, everything else stayed the same. So I just think that's such a powerful study to show that actually if we really do nurture our gut microbes with plenty of plant-based foods, then that can have, you know, incredible far-reaching benefits, and including on our mental health.
Now, a lot of the people that listen to this podcast are in the food industry. Now, what would we expect food manufacturers to do with this knowledge? Is there anything they can do to help gut health? And by which I mean they probably want to make money out of it.
Yeah, no,
and how can they incorporate this knowledge into the foods they produce?
Well, I think a lot of the concepts coming through is about going back to whole food. So trying not to over refine foods. For example, a simple thing is around oats. Instead of giving, you know, processed refined oats, actually giving jumbo oats are thought to be better for our overall health, including our gut health. Other things is, you know, talking more about dietary fiber, but not just adding in, you know, one type of fiber and then just to get that health claim. In fact, there's close to 100 different types of fiber. So trying to get in a diverse range of fibers and whole foods, I think, is going to be a principle coming through. In fact, the research suggests if we can get 30 different plant-based foods in our diet a week, we're more likely to have better gut health.
Wow. Is that difficult to do, do you think?
You know, it sounds like a lot. It can sound really intimidating, but simple things you can do, for example, adding a teaspoon of mixed seeds onto your breakfast cereal.
Yeah.
So you get, you know, 4 points there. Instead of always getting the red peppers, get the red and the green peppers. Similar with lettuce, all that sort of stuff, getting the multi-pack. So I think any manufacturers out there should be looking at more trying to get in diversity into their
yes.
products.
Yeah.
I think that's a really key thing. The other thing is around food additives. So my research group at King's is actually looking at potential negative effects of food additives in people with inflammatory bowel disease. So I think we're going to be a lot more savvy on what sorts of additives are being added to our food. And, you know, historically, these additives have been regarded as safe, but all of these studies have been more looking at their effect on human metabolism and have been done, you know, 30, 50 years ago before we really understood the gut microbes. So I think we need to redo a lot of these testings, looking at how they actually affect our microbial friends in there, and not just being, you know, human-centric and very focused on human metabolism, because as we're starting to see, keeping our microbes happy will keep the human body happy.
It is. It's like you're feeding the alien beast within, isn't it?
Yeah, although I like to think of it more as like a friendly pet, because, you know, it shouldn't be something to be feared. I like to, you know, relate to your inner potential. So if you really nourish what's, you know, going on inside you, then we're starting to see that, you know, it can improve so many facets of your life.
Yeah.
Both physical, mental, and all the rest of it.
Now, does this concept of the gut-brain axis and the potential health benefits play into the hands of unscrupulous food producers who quite like the idea of making a wild health claim for their products? Or is it a more of an exciting opportunity to make people better? Because I worry that that some people take this as an opportunity and use it in a bad way.
Yeah, look, I've been seeing that quite a lot recently where, you know, manufacturers are just starting to choose one type of bacteria, pop it in some chocolate, pop it in some cereal, pop it in some juice and go, look, this has got live bacteria in it. It's going to be good for you. And I think that's why I've gotten quite passionate about, you know, moving towards more of food industry and doing some of that research translation, because it's infuriating that we are doing, you know, amazing research, not just my group, you know, hundreds of different research groups around the world, yet it's often like the fad and potentially dangerous messages that are being fed to the general public, and they're not, I don't think, maximizing their, you know, inner potential or their gut health. It can be quite frustrating to see that, but I do think if we look to do more of evidence-based translation, this can be a real positive thing for the general public.
Yeah. Now, in terms of the research that's going on and that you're doing yourself as well, it's true to say that we're only scratching the surface. Is that right?
Yeah, no, we truly are. Although, you know, there has been just in the last couple of years an explosion of research, particularly looking
area,
at the gut-brain axis and probiotics, so the live bacteria. And in fact, there was just a review paper, which is called a systematic review, where they essentially pull all the individual studies together. And overall, they suggested that a probiotic, so specific types of probiotics, can have a benefit for people with depression and anxiety. Yeah. And there was 29 individual clinical trials out there looking at that. So, you know, the evidence is developing. Like you said, it probably is scratching the surface in terms of, you know, all of the benefits we can see from looking after our gut.
And do you think there's a fair amount of misinformation out there of the sort of opinion and rather than fact of people who swap nutritional nonsense that grabs this and just uses it for their own devices?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's happening a lot. And you see it also with the probiotic industry, where, you know, the public are very confused about probiotics, and a lot of people are spending quite a lot of money, and they're just doing it because they think it's going to be good for their gut health. But we're seeing that actually, when it comes to probiotics, we should consider them similar to vitamins, and that each different type actually does different functions and, you know, has different potential. So if you've, you know, taking antibiotics, you should actually take a certain type of probiotic, which would be different if you have IBS. So it's actually, you know, about becoming more aware of the intricacies, I guess, of this, which can be quite intimidating and complicated for people who, you know, don't spend their life researching it. So I totally get it. It's overwhelming for some.
And do you see a future where you will go into the chemist and you will choose a blend of fibre that will feed your particular biome, that there'll be sort of biome profiling, and you'll be able to match it with a set of inputs and make yourself feel better?
Yeah, this is, you know, definitely where we're heading. Our research group just published a paper last year where we looked at people with irritable bowel syndrome, and we took a poop sample at baseline, and we found that poop sample would predict whether someone was going to respond to a specific type of dietary intervention for their IBS. So, you know, we're moving on to second phase studies to validate that. But, it is extremely promising, as a way of therapy. I think in the future it will move to the general public, but I think for now it's easier to do the research, and it makes more sense to personalize the diets around people with certain conditions like irritable bowel syndrome. Although that does affect 10% of the people in the UK, so, you know, it's
quite a big subject already, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, what can healthcare professionals do to start helping their patients look after gut health? I mean, is it, again, give me a skimmed version of your book, if it's not too painful to do so. How do we? What are the basics that we can tell people?
I think, you know, probably if I had to break it down to maybe three key messages. One is about eating mostly plants. I know it's not always, you know, popular when you're dealing with patients who have very high meat diets, but plants offer so much nutrition, not only for the human cells, but for our gut microbes. So when we're looking at our plate, making sure that we're not having too much of the proteins of the animal meats. The second principle would be around diversity. So trying to get at least, like I mentioned, the 30 different plants types of plant-based foods in your diet, I think is going to be a really important thing. And, you know, with simple tips like switching out, single variety foods with multi-packed, salads with all different types of plants in it. It's kind of the simple tips that we can follow through. Now, another one which, isn't diet related, but we know that things like, our lifestyle, so stress, sleep and exercise also independently affect our gut health, irrespective of diet. Sleep, trying to get your 7 to 9 hours, which I know is very, very difficult, but it's really important to allow our gut that kind of rest time where our gut lining can actually regenerate. In fact, every 5 days or so, one part of our intestine actually sheds and regenerates. So it's really important for looking after our gut health.
That's fantastic. Okay, why don't you give yourself a big plug for your book before we say goodbye? Tell us all about it and why people should buy it.
Hopefully it'll sell itself, but I see it as an evidence-based guide to your gut. So for people who, aren't quite sure what gut health really is, I talk about, the basics. So what happens when we actually swallow food? We spend so much time fixating on what we actually eat, but very few of us actually knows what happens when we do swallow the food and all the sorts of things that happens inside. And that's really important, particularly for people who get gut symptoms and also fighting through a lot of the myths that they're sure to face. We then talk about the gut microbes. So what are these things? What do they actually do for us on a day-to-day basis? How can we look after them? Simple little tips like that. We then look at nutrition for the gut. So talking about what our gut microbes' favorite foods are and some simple ways we can incorporate that into our diet. Also things, I guess, for people who want a little bit more detail around food additives, food forms. So what types of, having a smoothie, is that better than having just the vegetables and kind of that sort of concept? We then move into, so there's quite a lot in the book. It's jam-packed. And we move into like simple ways to deal with gut symptoms. If you've got bloating, if you've got constipation, and personalized kind of strategies, which I think is really important because no person's gut is the same. It's around personalization. We touch on food intolerances, how to diagnose some of the basic ones, in the safety of your own home, and then look at IBS, and then finish off with lifestyle strategies around exercise, stress, and 50 different gut-loving recipes that you can adjust according to where you are in your gut health journey. Again, really reflecting that no one's gut is the same and everyone's at different stages. So there is, I think, 11 different assessments that I get people to complete throughout the book to get a better idea of where their gut health is and little steps and practical ways they can kind of improve that through diet and lifestyle.
Excellent. Well, that sounds brilliant and look forward to seeing it. Dr. Megan Rossi, thank you so much for talking to us.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Table Talk podcast. If you've enjoyed it, please share a review. If you like what you've heard, find out more on foodmatterslive.com or find us on Twitter and Facebook.